You already know that Invisible Fence brand creates happier homes where pets can safely play in the yard out of danger. But did you know we also have products to help your pets avoid bad behaviors with trash cans, furniture, and unsafe areas both inside and out? We even offer a programmable pet door for more pet freedom. And expert installation plus professional pet training guarantee success. To schedule a free in-home consultation, visit InvisibleFence.com or call 1-800-578-3647.
Duffy's Beer and Much More in Pleasant Hills, 412-653-BEER. See all of our weekly specials at Duffy'sBeer.com. And get your pumpkin and Oktoberfest beers before they're gone. Your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Duffy's Beer and Much More in Pleasant Hills and online at Duffy'sBeer.com.
Good morning!
Crib Live Radio presents the Morning Sports Report.
And this is my wake-up show. I'll be coming at you every morning. About this time, hoping to make your experience the best available in this price range.
An update and preview of everything going on in Pittsburgh sports. Now the Morning Sports Report. Trib Total Media. See what's next. Good morning.
We're brought to you by Duffy's Beer and Invisible Fence Brand. It's the Morning Sports Report. Steelers 24, Chargers 20. Oh, that genius Mike Tomlin. Or was it Todd Haley? Or was it Ben Roethlisberger? Tim, who the hell called that play that won the game? A pivotal game decided at the pivotal seconds on the clock last night.
Well, the world now knows that Ben Roethlisberger called the bomb to Marcus Wheaton thanks to the great Alex Flanagan. So.
How did he not take credit for the last play? If you're going to go take credit for the touchdown, how did Ben not take credit for that?
Because, maybe he did. Obviously, if he takes credit for that, they'll be more inclined to run again in the future. And you can't have that. So you can't take credit for the running plays. You only take credit for the passing plays that work. And last night on the postgame show, roughly, I don't know, about 1:15 in the morning, I asked Charlie Batch, do you think, you know Ben pretty well, do you think Ben takes credit for the Marcus Wheaton bomb if it's an interception or an incompletion? Like, is he taking credit for it then, or is he only taking credit now that it worked out?
How did Charlie answer that one?
He just sort of laughed and acknowledged with laughter the exact point I was driving at.
What a sequence. That was a very – I don't want to say it was similar to the Super Bowl because that's the Super Bowl. But there were quite a few Pete Carroll references. You know, Pete Carroll would have thrown it here. A lot of those guffaws going on. But, Tim, it was almost like the Belichick situation where he didn't take the timeout and looked like a genius in the Super Bowl. The Steelers score, and they look like the genius. But, of course, if Bell gets stuffed here, we are crushing them for taking a handoff 7 yards deep and not having a timeout or a play that will allow you to take your timeout to kick the field goal and go to overtime, right?
You hit on a bunch of things there. First of all, the Belichick thing about not calling the timeout wasn't on the table for him to look like a genius because a die is such an idiot, and he launched himself into Heath Miller's head. So because of that, the clock stopped, and they didn't have to use the timeout.
Legit penalty, right? I mean, is anybody questioning that call in that situation? He hit him in the head.
It looked like he launched to try to knock the ball out. Now, from his thinking, and I take that back. I'm not even going to go down that path. I was about to say that if he was thinking, hey, what am I going to lose in yardage? I might as well jar the ball loose. I guess I could understand that. But he wasn't thinking. He was just trying to go after him. He was trying to knock the ball out, regardless of the penalty. I think he was just trying to run the risk. Who cares? But I don't think he was thinking about the timeout. And if he was trying to measure in his own head, what's the difference? He's at the 1 yard line anyway. I might as well knock him down or we lose the game if he gets in. He gave them the opportunity for the game to be lost and not tied by hitting him in the head, because I still think Heath goes down and doesn't fall into the end zone. Don't you?
I'm not sure. I mean,
Do you think that the blow to the head kept him out of the end zone, or was he going to fall short anyway?
It was a pretty vicious blow. I mean, it definitely did some damage. I mean, I think it stunned him for a minute, and he fell sort of sideways. So I can't say unequivocally he would not have got in. I can't say either way.
That play was just as big as the final play itself because
of
what happened. I don't know, and we'll never. I feel like I want to ask him this at the press conference today, and then at the same time I don't, because I know I'm going to get a bullshit answer. So I don't want to set myself up for a bullshit answer, but I'm probably going to ask him anyway. Because you know what he's going to say. It doesn't matter. We know what happened. I don't have to give you that answer because we won the game. But I really want to know what would have happened if they had to call the timeout after that catch.
If it's a legal tackle, he's down
right.
The one.
Let's say they don't drop the flag. let's say that the refs blow the call, kind of like they blew the clock running. But let's say that the refs blow the call and they don't drop the penalty flag on the blow to the head. Or let's say that the blow to the head never happens and he's just tackled there at the 1 yard line and they have to use the timeout. Do they then go for the win with Le'Veon Bell, or do they kick the field goal? Try to kick the field goal. I'll underscore try to kick the field goal.
Oh, don't question the Boz after that beautiful performance last night. Don't you dare tarnish the Boz in his debut.
I think I called Boswell 10 different names in the postgame show last night. Bartholomew. I got his name wrong about 10 times, but at least
the great and wondrous Boz.
Yeah, he kicked one field goal, and that's exactly what they needed out of him. And we'll get to more of the kicking issues surrounding not only the Steelers and the Chargers too, but how it affected the game as the show goes along. But I would like to know what their thinking would have been if they had to burn the timeout after the Heath catch, because that would tell the story of the thinking going into the play call. Because before we speculate, Ken, should we just use Mike Tomlin's voice to set up the conversation about whether or not he made a great play call or whether or not he just got damn lucky?
Yes. Okay, I'd love to hear what Mike said last night, because I did not stay up for your post game.
I don't blame you. This is what Tomlin had to say after the game.
I think the game is won or lost right here, and you will not have time to call a timeout.
I'm going to have time to call a timeout. I feel that way. I'm hoping that I do. But we got to run the football, man. We got Le'Veon Bell. We had an opportunity to win the game. We're on the road in a hostile environment. We got to play to win, and that's what we did.
What are your thoughts going for it all the way?
Yes. We're just trying to win. You know, we're trying to win the game. I'm not gonna overanalyze the call. I'll leave that to you guys.
Did anybody tell him to get up in there quick when they have 5 seconds?
We're just trying to score and win.
Okay. So,
well, that's not really unequivocal. I mean, he contradicts himself. Well, I don't know. He basically said, yeah, I went for it. We were going to go for the win. I take it from that yes, he's saying if they had to call their last timeout, they would have gone for it. Same situation there, too.
He's saying, I hope I have a timeout left, though. That was the lead. That was the lead of what he said. I'm thinking that I'm going to have a timeout left.
That's true. He did throw the timeout in there, so he was aware of
it. Throw it out there. He led with it. That was the first thing he said. Josh, play it again. Cue it back up again, because this is important. Play it one more time.
I think the game is won or lost right here, and you will not have time to call a timeout.
I'm going to have time to call a timeout. I feel that way. I'm hoping that I do. But we got to run the football, man. We got Le'Veon Bell. We had an opportunity to win the game. We're on the road in a hostile environment. We got to play to win, and that's what we did.
First of all, hostile environment, my ass. That was a better home crowd than half of them at Heinz Field have been the last 4 or 5 years.
Well, yeah, and didn't he lead with thanks to Steeler Nation?
Yeah,
actually?
Thanks to Steeler Nation. Then he turns into, hostile environment, road hostile crowd. Come on. What a coaching cliche that is.
Well, I take it from that then that you're right, because when I heard it again now, he's saying...
He's contradicting himself. He's
couching
himself.
He was willing to roll the dice a little bit. He was hoping he had the timeout, but I'm sure he's acquiescing there that there's a chance if things go wrong, we run out of time. But I'm willing to take that chance. But that doesn't mean he would have gone for it if they had no timeout left. That's a different thing then. You know, if they had to burn their last timeout and Heath did not get the penalty drawn against him, he's basically, so he's not saying that. It is a little confusing. I don't know what he would have done. What would you have done, Tim,
I would not have run that play. Just because it works doesn't mean it was smart. I would not have run that play.
What a great play.
Oh, you liked it?
What a great run. No, well, the Wildcat, I don't like in general, although it was working frequently last night, and I got to go back to a conversation I had with Le'Veon Bell last year. We were talking about the pistol and all the pistol they were running. And that's not the Wildcat. I understand it's different. He's behind the quarterback in that situation. I don't know, in the pistol, he's probably deeper than 7 yards, right? He's probably 8 or 9 yards deep. I don't know. But he said he likes having the vision. He likes getting the football quicker than he does in a traditional handoff because he can survey the field and he can basically allow his blockers to set up and he can pick and choose which hole he wants to go through. And throughout the night, Tim, he had success in that Wildcat. And so because of that, why would you put Vic under center and run a traditional I formation, send him over the top if he's not comfortable in it? It actually is probably the best run for him, although with the time constraints, that's what makes it a tough call. Like, I give them credit if that's their best chance
of success. Well, the time constraints, everything, though, Ken. I mean, we can go chapter and verse about handing him the ball versus the Wildcat versus, you know, having him with a fullback in front of himself or leaping over the top. And we can debate all that, but the time constraints is everything, particularly for a back whose entire style is to take 2.5 seconds before it makes his commitment to the hole. That's what he does. He hops around back there like a bunny rabbit until he sees a crease and then decides to go through it. That's how he runs.
I know, but that's not everything. Everything is scoring. That's the whole thing there. Who cares about the time if he's going to get a yard, if you're guaranteed he's going to get a yard based on the best play you can call for him?
Did that look like a guarantee to you?
Yes.
That looked about a millimeter to me. That's not a guarantee. That was a millimeter.
It was a great run, huh? I mean, and DeCastro did get in the way of two guys. He's fallen over backwards on top of him. And I've seen too many running backs, Tim, that for whatever reason don't have the presence of mind to stretch the ball out there in that situation in games over the years. I'm not saying it's like the most legendary. You would think every running back down there would have that frame of mind, but they don't, and he did. I chalk it up to an A-plus run from Le'Veon Bell. I know it's a one-yard run, but that's a great run.
The Immaculate Extension.
I like it. I like it a lot.
One of our
it's as
first,
good as the buzz.
Yeah, one of our first callers to the postgame show came up with that one, or stole it from somewhere else. I don't know. It doesn't really matter. But now I'm stealing it from him and using it as our own. So the Immaculate Extension wins the game. I just didn't like the notion of that run there where he's coming from 7 yards back to get a run and you don't use the ability of the timeout to protect yourself. Now let me ask you this. Let me ask you this question, okay? Because I don't know how this would have worked. So, have we seen yet a definitive? Did the clock go to zero with his knee on the ground, or would there have been a second left?
Oh God, I wasn't even watching the clock. I
because
just assumed
it was so close.
Not good to do. And as we just found out,
I thought that as the ball went across the line of scrimmage, or excuse me, across the goal line, as he stretched across, I thought that's when the clock went from one to zero. Like, I thought they were going to have to kick the extra point with 1 second left. You know, if you look at it really closely, I'm not 100% certain it went to zero as he was tackled. So if they reviewed it and there was still a second left, do they get to call timeout right away after the dead ball for the review? Like, do they have to line up and then turn around to the ref and call timeout? I mean, how does that work?
Well, I guess I'm confused. You're saying after Bell's touchdown run or after Miller's?
No, I'm saying that if he did not get in.
Oh, if he didn't get in.
If he didn't get in, if they reviewed it and they determined that his knee was down, if they overturned the play after the review and they still had the timeout, could they just look at the ref and say time? Does he say to the crowd?
Probably not.
He turns to the crowd and says, the runner has been deemed to be down by contact. There was 1 second left on the clock. Pittsburgh calls timeout, kick a field goal, tie, go to overtime.
That's a great question. They might have them line up again and start the clock on my signal sort of thing?
Right, exactly. So they can start the clock and the signal, and what everybody in the stadium turns and yells, timeout, timeout, timeout!
No, no, it's a hostile environment. Only a quarter of the stadium would have done it.
I would like to see that one more time because I didn't see a definitive. They never brought the clock into question when going frame by frame, moment by moment, to see when his knee was down versus when the clock would have expired.
SportsTalk@TribWeb.com. Would love your takes on this game last night and the pivotal nature of it and the final series and what you were thinking when they lined up in the Wildcat. Not only once, but twice, Tim. I mean, they came out before San Diego took the timeout, and they stuck with it.
Right.
Same exact. I don't know if it was the same call, but it was the same formation. And they went with their guy. And do you think it's directly related to last week and the overtime loss to Baltimore and not giving it to number 26?
I absolutely do, which is why, again, Tomlin sounds like a hypocrite. Because, you know, he does this whole preening, well, we've got Le'Veon Bell. We're going to give the ball to Le'Veon Bell routine. Well, where the hell were you last week then in overtime on third and fourth down?
Better late than never, though, right?
You know, he's acting like it's such a no-brainer, like only an idiot would not give the ball to Le'Veon Bell. Oh, okay. What were you last week then when you had four opportunities between two separate third and fourth down sequences and you handed him the ball zero times? You know, like, don't posture to me that you're such a genius for going to the obvious when you didn't do it last week.
It's a game of self-promoters. I think we can both safely say Mike Tomlin and Ben Roethlisberger are among those guys.
Yes.
They've got to their position somehow, and they know how to stay there. the whole sequence of the game, though, from I didn't think they'd score 10 points in this game.
Yesterday, for a long time, they didn't.
I know they didn't. But, you know, when the Steelers get the ball, and, of course, the clock runs to 2:38 after the touchback, which Should have been 256. It's incredible. 18-second runoff. But before we get to that, Tim, I mean, just the fact that Michael Vick could lead this team on a drive when he needed to, not just for a field goal, but for the game-winning touchdown in the last 2.5 minutes, that's fairly stunning to me, based on what we saw for the first 3 hours of this game.
Yeah, he looked inept for, what, 50 minutes?
Yeah. Like, could he and Haley looked inept, not just Michael Vick. The combination of the two looked like they had no idea.
No offense to our host that's on right before us, but if any of the Charger defensive backs had hands better than Ike, he would have thrown 3 interceptions.
That's true. Yeah, that's a great point. Number 27, whoever that was, seemed to have several clang off the hands.
And none of them would have been easy catches, but they would have been catches that receivers would have made. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Now, maybe they were turning late or whatever, and they – I don't know. If you play that position, I guess you're thinking pass breakup a lot of the time before you are getting the pick.
You know, I'm looking – I'm sorry, Ken. I didn't mean to distract you there because I now ran out of the camera. But Josh found a still frame shot of Bell. And who is that? Ramon Foster and Kelvin Beachum, it looks like, have their hands extended in the air. The refs have not said touchdown. But the two offensive linemen are signaling touchdown as Bell is going to the ground. It's kind of the shot is a little bit obscured, but there's 2 full seconds left on the clock as those two guys first throw their hands up in the air to say touchdown.
So, in other words, if he was down, they would have had 2 seconds to either call the timeout or after the review, which there would have been an automatic one. It's a great question. I don't know what the rule is there or what the league would have done. Hell, they don't go by their own rules half the time, so how could anybody predict what they would have done?
And plus, that clock operator looked pretty trustworthy to me. I don't know about you.
Which they say is hired by the league and not the team, right? They made an emphasis of that. Of course they did.
Did they?
Who's
they? Because I don't think the league has commented yet. Apparently, the league's thinking on this, their best interest is to say, oh, he's clear. Ken, you got to see it again. The female ref, the side
Sarah
judge.
Sarah Thomas, yep.
Who, by the way, has the quickest whistle in the National Football League. Did you notice that trend yesterday?
Well, the play I think you're probably bitching about where it looked like it was a quick whistle.
One of our tweets said,
look back at it.
The whole night.
But he had a knee down on the one play that I really thought was that they blew it dead before like 2 or 3 yards. But Bell's knee did hit on the one play where they blew the whistle.
And there were a couple. No, it's more like in the grasp stuff. It was guys being held up and moved backwards. It was to the point, Ken, where I thought a memo must have gone out or something like that. They were so fast with their whistles yesterday. It was obvious. And people were right. I went on Twitter and checked, and everybody was saying the same. Not everybody. I mean, lots of fans were saying the same thing. That, wow, this lady ref sure has a quick whistle, doesn't she? And they 100% true. Anytime there was a close play, somebody in the grasp, that must have been it. It must have been like a player safety memo or something about players being in the grasp or nearly in the grasp. Call the whistle because maybe guys are getting hit while they're still fighting.
Yeah, that's
for
a weird
extra yardage.
Thing. Like, I don't see too many injuries on those plays. You would think there would be more of them. Like it would make sense if we had a bunch of injuries and there was a memo that went out. But have you seen? Do you remember seeing like guys have knees buckled or? I'm sure it doesn't feel good, but you know, linemen jumping on the pile to push it an extra 2 or 3 yards. Like, should that be part of the fabric of the game or not? I got no problem if they have a quicker whistle, but you just don't want to see a play where it could be 2 or 3 yards extra and they blow the whistle dead. But in terms of the clock itself now and the clock runoff, Tim, the 18 seconds.
Well, give me a second here because I am watching it in real time right now and I cut off my own thought. But as the ESPN.com zooms out, you could see Sarah Thomas on the sideline with her hands already extended in the air clearly. If not with 2 seconds left, then with 1 second left. So if they had overturned that, there would have been a second left for I don't know what to happen. Like you said, does everybody line up and turn around and yell, timeout, timeout, timeout? Or do they just say, we have looked at the clock, there's a second left, Pittsburgh elects to use its last timeout, and Boswell comes out and kicks the field goal with 1 second left, they go to overtime?
Well, hey, I mean, if they go to overtime, do you feel good about them winning that game? I don't know. I mean, like the Chargers' offensive line was such a mess, but they were starting to hit the tight ends with such frequency.
What we saw yesterday, and it always makes me laugh when this happens, is how coaches coach defensively and how coaches coach offensively, too, for that matter, as time is starting to wind down. When the pressure gets to them and it's nut-cutting time, you just see the players execute a little bit more crisply. They go into their bag of tricks and call the best plays possible all of a sudden that maybe they held back. But you know, look at the fourth quarter compared to the, like you said, the first 3 hours of the football game. Look from about the 13-minute mark on, it was all offense. After it was nothing but defense for the first 3 hours of the night. And my thinking being that, you know, probably the Chargers win, depending on what the coin toss was, because I thought they were starting to get more of a rhythm offensively, and obviously the Steelers were too, but they probably go back into a more conservative, easy shell to try to protect Vic again. And that's kind of dumb, but you say, oh, there's 15 minutes put back on the clock, so we can be more conservative here, and we don't have to be as daring. We can be more careful. Well, when they got daring and they had to air it out, what happened? They threw a bomb down the field to Wheaton. He threw it down the middle to Heath. He saw
a Hayward Bay on the sideline, right, there, a little bootleg. It was like, where was that play the whole game? Where you had Vic on the move out of the pocket, and he was comfortable, and bang.
And he scrambled. He went on his own and ran, finally, for 24 yards.
What a huge run, yeah. I was ready to pull for the backup quarterback. I mean, I think, like, that was two quarters ago. I was asking for Landry Jones.
You have found the bottom of the Steeler rabbit hole when Landry Jones is on Trends Map on Twitter in Pittsburgh.
Was he really? Was that official?
When Landry Jones is trending in Pittsburgh, that's when you know things have gone off the rails.
SportsTalk@tribweb.com. The email of the show, we're brought to you by Duffy's Beer here in the morning show. 294 Curry Hollow Road. Ken Laird, Tim Benz, Guy Junker will join us later in the show from San Diego. He was in the postgame locker room settings. You can see all of Duffy's specials at Duffy'sBeer.com. The clock rundown, Tim, before we get to some emails here. Are people making enough of a big deal of it, or are we all just waiting to see what the Chargers or what the NFL says about this officially?
Well, okay.
Like Tomlin said, it didn't matter. Tomlin said it didn't
matter. No. Hold on. No. Tomlin didn't say it didn't matter. He said he didn't know. And I think we might have that audio, too. Do we have Tomlin talking about the clock? Because that's another part of this that I wanted.
Well, he might have said he didn't know, but when he was told about it, he then said it didn't change the outcome of the game. So, again, he sort of was...
Yeah, because he was stunned, Ken. When Mike Pursuta asked him about that, he was stunned. You could hear it in his voice. He's like, no, I didn't know. Oh, well, it didn't affect the outcome of the game. He was trying to put on the tough guy routine, but he had no idea until he was asked that the clock had lost 18 seconds. None. How is that possible? How do you not know? How do you not notice that?
Well, I didn't know.
How do doofuses on Twitter know and you don't? Well, you know what? I mean, Ken, it's not your job to notice everything. It's their job to notice everything, or it's their job to have people hired to notice everything. How does no one look at the clock? You know, when there's – was there a timeout? Was there even a TV timeout maybe? After the field goal was kicked, how does someone –
There was 2:56 left when the field goal was kicked.
Right. After the field goal was kicked, how is it that no one on that sideline looks and says, there's 2:56 left, let's consider our play calling thusly?
Yeah.
And then when they get out there, and it's not 2:56 after a touchback, and it's 2:38, how does Todd Haley or Mike Tomlin or a quality control coach, whoever it is, not put their hands up in the air and say, wait a minute? Or after the touchback, like I think people saw it on Twitter, because after the touchback, there was a shot from the field of Michael Vick buckling his chin strap as he was walking onto the field. And in the background, you saw on the big board the clock running. That's what was on the broadcast where people saw it. I don't know if people saw it on the little, you know, the little bug in the corner that has the clock running all the time. I think people saw it on the big board.
Right.
And you're telling me nobody on the sidelines, no one on the Steelers sidelines,
it's
was looking at the clock and seeing it run.
Nor did anybody on ESPN mention it. Like, even through the post game, they didn't even bring it up.
Yeah, that was bad. And furthermore, Ken, it just underscores the loss that they had against the Patriots. Remember when everybody was going nuts? Okay, I'm watching the Monday Night Football broadcast right now, and the clock is running in the bug.
Yeah, it was on the TV because I went back and watched it myself.
And here's the other thing. Someone stopped it. Someone,
yeah, right.
Someone physically had to stop it at 2:38.
And they were like, oh, no
and
problem.
No one said anything.
That's a great point. And so you start to get suspicious. Now, your buddies in New England are saying if that happened at Foxborough,
of course they are, because it always comes back to the Patriots.
Tomlin would have then been, losing his mind over. This happens all the time when we come to Foxborough.
No, Tomlin still wouldn't have noticed. Again, see, that's a crucial point of the conversation. He didn't know until he was asked. It's not like the headsets where he didn't say anything until he was asked. He didn't know he was asked until, you know, when he was finally aware of it because reporters brought it up. It could have happened in New England. It could have happened on his wristwatch, and he wouldn't have known because he wasn't looking, and no one on his staff was looking.
Tomlin's not a good sideline coach in terms of game management and clock awareness, just general awareness. He's just not good. I mean, maybe he's average. Maybe there are other coaches that we'd be – I know Marvin Lewis is bad. I've watched enough of his games to know that, Tim. It's baffling how bad these guys are on a weekly basis, at least when you can sit from the comfort of your living room and watch and see everything happening. I will say, though, he's probably right. If they have 2:56 on the clock, they probably run two plays anyway, and they're the same Le'Veon running plays, and we probably go to the two-minute warning, and it probably does not affect the outcome of the game. Not that Tomlin knew that. If he wasn't aware of the situation until after the game. It had to be told by Mike Prisuta.
The point I was trying to make about New England was I was going to go back to that game, not because of the whole, oh, if it happened in New England, blah, blah, blah. You know, I was going to bring up the Brady thing. Remember when Brady just turned and looked and did the reset the clock motion and the clock operator just did it?
No, in the Steelers game?
Yeah, you don't remember that controversy? All the people on Twitter complaining that Brady controls Foxborough, that, you know, whatever Brady wants, Brady gets. All the Steeler fans that were making a big stink about that.
I don't, but
there was
okay.
A moment where the play clock was running where it shouldn't have been running, and they eventually did the right thing, which is reset the play clock, but the refs didn't do it. Brady asked for it, and they just did it. You don't remember that in the huddle?
No, I don't.
Yeah, all right, he's in the huddle, and he does the play clock motion thing, and they just reset it. Okay. So my point is Brady himself realized that. Where was anybody on the Steelers sideline to realize that the game clock was running?
It's a great question, but Tim, they won. And, you know, I'm not saying these are insignificant things, but it is a huge win for the team, right? I mean, this is a, much as I agree with you, Tomlin is a little lacking in some skills there, and they got lucky in a lot of ways. This is a giant swing, right? I mean, from 3-2 to 2-3 to win against an AFC team. That could be tiebreakers for wild cards down the road, and who knows when Ben's coming back, but to steal one in the Victober era, that's just, you can't put into words how big of a comeback that was.
Well, sure, and I pointed this out before the season even started. I thought this was a huge game because I didn't think the Steelers were going to win the division. I still don't think they're going to win the division. I feel more secure in saying that now because they still have to go through a few more games with Michael Vick at quarterback instead of Ben Roethlisberger, and the Cincinnati Bengals are 5-0. I think that the Chargers very well could be a team that you're vying against for the final wild card. Now you've got a head-to-head win over them. This win could be more important than the Baltimore win would have been. And I know that sounds crazy because it's in division, but if you're considering that win to be more important should they have gotten it, then you're also considering that they're at least in a tie with the Bengals, having split with them and then in a tie with them for the division. And I think that's a pipe dream at this point. I think the Bengals are going to win the division. You got to get into the fifth or sixth wild card. And
if the Steelers beat them on November 1st, then it's all back in play. That's a big game. You beat them head to head, and that's a two game swing right in the division. And you've got but if they lose that game, it's over basically.
If the Bengals stub their toe once or twice more, and the Steelers don't have their usual bad loss that you're not anticipating,
right?
Yeah, but I mean, the Bengals are still two games ahead of the Steelers already.
They are. Their schedule is not the easiest. They've got Denver at the end of the year on the road. That's probably a loss. You know, you can parse through the schedule, but they have a couple tough games left. They've got Arizona on the road, which the Steelers have this week, which looks like a loss, right? I mean, that's the other part of the big win last night. Did you feel good about your prospects of keeping up with Arizona based on what offense they've put up lately with Vic through 3.5 quarters or whatever it was until he finally got going? Well, I'm thinking if they don't win that game, they're definitely losing Sunday at Heinz Field.
Yeah, I still don't like their chances against Arizona here. I mean, Arizona has the best point differential in the National Football League by far. They're plus 100 on the year. That's 27 better than even the Patriots.
Wow.
So I don't like their chances against Arizona. We have the audio here, finally. We were able to clip it out. Here's what Tomlin had to say about the clock. Listen to his tone of voice, and you tell me if he was at all aware of the clock until Mike Prisuta brought it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, you where you lost about 18 seconds on the touchback to when your possession started, the clock was running?
Again, I wasn't aware of that, no.
Lost about 18 seconds.
Okay. Didn't change the outcome of the game.
So?
Okay.
That's what he
should have
said.
We won.
So?
Well, in that sense, you're New England buddies, and I was reading one story. Jerry Thornton, there's a guy up there you worked with?
Yes, Jerry.
Okay, now he's a...
defender of the wall, yes.
He's a big Patriots guy.
He's not even paid by them either. That's the amazing part.
Okay.
Now, Jerry's very funny. Like, Jerry's an entertaining read. He's an entertaining read and an entertaining listen, but he is a... I mean, it's his thing. He's a shameless defender of the wall.
Well, he says, I defy you to find one mention on the internet linking the Chargers to cheating. One complaint by anybody in the Steelers organization saying this thing happens all the time in San Diego. One sanctimonious diatribe hurled at Chargers coach Mike McCoy about how he always pushes the rules to the edge. And not one mentioned by the NFL. Now, the NFL is supposed to come out this morning with some kind of a statement.
Jerry, calm down. It's because the coach was too stupid to even realize the clock was running. How could he charge the Patriots the Chargers with cheating when he didn't even realize they were being cheated?
If they lose the game,
oh my God, these people are unbelievable.
But if the Steelers had lost the game and he was then presented with that information, would he then have launched an investigation? And would Steelers fans?
Ken, an investigation should be launched anyway because the clock operator was inept. There should be an investigation launched.
It is embarrassing, right? I mean, that is.
You have to figure out why that happened. I don't care if it's New England, San Diego, the Superdome, Ford Field. It doesn't matter. You have to figure out why that happened. But, you know, again, Patriot fans are so consciously aware of everything that goes on the league and bringing it back to themselves. It's habitual at this point. Well, like, watching the NFL through the lens of a Patriots fan is like talking to Hines Ward. Everything comes back to you regardless of what the starting point of the conversation is. This has nothing to do with the Patriots, but they'll make it be about the Patriots come hell or high water.
But he has a little bit of a point to me on this one. Tomlin, if this was New England, Tomlin would have bitched. But the difference is they won and they didn't lose. They, you know.
Ken, he had to be aware of it first. He was too stupid to even know the clock was running down.
But if presented that and they lose, it's a different story, right? Then Tomlin's like, well, we'll investigate. We'll look into it. And there's a ton of bitching this morning about the clock mishap.
Sure, but they should be doing that anyway. Win or lose, how does the clock operator from Timbuktu or from Dorchester lose 18 seconds? It doesn't matter if it's New England or not.
Let's get some email going. SportsTalkTribune.com, a lot of different angles to this game. And man, it was so bad and yet so entertaining. I don't know if Chargers fans liked this game, Tim, because they probably felt like they should be blowing this team out of the water with Vic. Probably a highly frustrating game to them. But then again, their offensive line was terrible. It was, what was worse, the Chargers' O-line or Vic and Haley? And I thought that would decide the game. But in the end, both kind of rectified things. Vic and Haley got it together, as did the Chargers' O-line for the last two. I did not see that fourth quarter coming at all. When that thing started to go that way. Jeff in Illinois, though, emails. He says, regardless of the non-existent offense, guys, I think the story from last night's game was the Steelers' defense and the kicker. We haven't talked to Steelers' D at all so far here this morning, Tim. What kind of grade should they get for that?
The defense itself, B+. I mean, for as good as it was, it allowed 356 yards passing to Phillip Rivers. You know, where they've gotten so much better this year is on third down. For a while, the two teams were 3 of 20 on third down. So if you wanted to go back to the Raven game, to that point, it would have then been 11 of 56 for the two teams combined on third and fourth downs in those two games. So the Steelers' defense has gotten a lot better on third down. They've applied far more pressure on the passer, and they're getting the ball back occasionally. They got two more turnovers yesterday, which is encouraging to see. One of them went for a touchdown. So the defense, yeah, B+, A-, but, you know, that first drive looked like you were watching the Patriot game again.
Oh, my God. Will Allen.
Gates was Gronkowski. Woodhead was Deion Lewis. And for that drive and the next drive, Phillip Rivers was Tom Brady. And Rivers was 8 of 8 to start the game. The tight end was completely uncovered, and the little scat back out of the backfield was having a field day.
Must have hoped, like I did, that Gates was going to be rusty. Otherwise, how do you put Will Allen on him in single coverage? Yeah, and Will Allen mercifully left the game with an ankle injury. Otherwise, that probably would have continued for the whole night. Although I guess it did come back around again, but at least for a little while they minimized him. That was embarrassing to start the game. But you do have to give him credit, Tim. And as far as the Blake interception goes, that's a great pick. I mean, it's one of the most nonchalant pick sixes I've ever seen. But we haven't seen many corners that they've got right now with Cockrell and Blake with some presence of mind to actually, you know, come up with an interception or two. And that's changed the game for them.
Cockrell also, I thought, made a huge play. That tackle that he had at the end of the first half on Keenan Allen. And this probably got washed up in all the other discussion of everything else that's going on with this game that we can kick around. But Cockrell tackled Keenan Allen a yard short.
On the bubble screen.
Was it a bubble screen? It was a yard short of the first down marker at the end of the game, or at the end of the first half. So on first down, Allen catches a ball. Cockrell tackles him. It's second and one. And then San Diego, for whatever reason, and I know we decide in our minds almost in advance of every game that we're going to attack our own offensive coordinator and head coach for clock management and play calling, right? Well, let's do it for the other team, too. I said this during the San Francisco game. I'll say it during the San Diego game as well. What the hell was that pass to Danny Woodhead sideways, losing 2 yards? And it must be something they do all the time because James Harrison knew it was coming the minute they lined up. Did you see that?
I forgot about this sequence. That's a great point, actually, because now that I'm looking back at it, so you're saying Cockrell held it to a 9-yard gain instead
Cockrell,
of a 10-yard
right,
gain.
Right, yes. Cockrell,
he was trying to strip the ball out.
Yeah, I don't remember the tackle itself exactly. I just remember him bringing Keenan Allen down a yard short of the sticks, which made it second down. So they called that dippy play where they throw it sideways to Danny Woodhead.
And James Harrison read it. It was a great breed by Harrison to get over there.
Harrison knew what was coming, pushed him out of bounds. They lost 2 yards. They couldn't get the first down then, and it still wound up being a 60-yard field goal attempt.
Yeah.
You know, so if it's,
and Keith Butler brought Golden on a blitz on the 3rd and 3. It was a good blitz from the right side.
So if it's 1st and 10, do they really go to that Danny Woodhead play there? Maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe they don't, though. And if they get 10 yards further on a more conventional pass, or they go to the sideline with something, then maybe Lambeau makes the field goal kick. Now you're talking about a 6-point lead at the end of the game as opposed to a 3-point lead. So, you know, it could have never mattered because maybe this, you know, at that point, then now you've got to make the field goal with Boswell. Not the field goal, but the extra point. Now your crucial extra point comes into play. I'm surprised you weren't tweeting at the end of the game, "Go for two! Go for two!"
Not with Michael Vick in that offense. They did kick the extra point at the end of the game.
They had
the
to, yes. You were forced to. That's the rule.
By the way, I thought you were going to bring up the end of the third quarter. Oh, good.
We had a caller on the postgame show, which he brought up an interesting point. Let's just say for the sake of argument in that situation, the touchdown has now put the Steelers up 22-20. All right? So if you have your extra point blocked and it's brought back for two, now you're tied. You still have to take the snap, but if you're the holder, don't you just run backwards and fall down and wait to be touched? Like, you don't actually kick that ball, do you?
But it doesn't run any time off the clock if you do that, though.
It doesn't?
Right?
The clock stops?
No, not on an extra, not on a conversion.
Okay, but then what's the difference in the conversion between three and... You've only got time for the kick. You've only got time for, they're going to return a touch. They're going to return a kickoff for a touchdown, or they're not, to win the game.
Yeah, it would be just the kickoff situation. Yeah, I mean, right.
Why would you risk it is what I'm saying. Why would you risk the kick?
Well, what would you do instead?
Just run in the line of scrimmage or take a knee or fall.
On the kickoff itself?
No, on the extra point. If it's 22-20 and you snap the ball, you have to snap the ball, then why not just have the holder go down? And whether time runs off the clock or not, it's irrelevant. Because
no, but time doesn't run there, though. It's on a conversion, it's just an untimed down.
I understand that. But if it, whether it's, so okay, so there's 1 second left, and you kick the ball, you kick off the ball, you're not following me here on this, are you?
No, not at all.
Okay, never mind, move on.
Okay. I thought you were going to bring up the end of the third quarter, Tim, where Shamarco Thomas had to come in for two plays, maybe one play, I don't know. He came in for one, and instead of running a second play, Philip Rivers waited for the clock to expire, and I'm thinking, does he not know how bad your Syracuse boy Shamarco Thomas is? They blew it right there. And when they came back for the after the timeout, incomplete, and they settled for the field goal to tie it at 10, they had a big play just waiting for them anywhere over the middle with as bad as Shamarco has been. And I didn't think the Chargers pushed it enough there, but that gets to your point of bad decision-making on both sides of this game.
Again, further proof that whenever you're on Trends Map on Twitter, it's usually for bad reasons. You know, when I saw Shamarco trending on Twitter after, for whatever reason, he thought he was allowed to catch the punt before the guy catching the punt is allowed to do. And people just destroyed him, and rightfully so, for that stupid decision.
That was dumb. God, their special teams, the penalties last night were infuriating.
Four straight penalties on special teams on punts.
Wow.
They had four special teams penalties in the first 20 minutes. But anyway,
that's a Danny Smith issue for this week.
He made up for it by recovering the fumble, and it was nice to see Bud Dupree, Jarvis Jones, Shamarco Thomas, all the young guys who need to develop actually making some plays on defense.
Yeah, that's a great point. Jarvis with the forced fumble. JB emails sportstalk@tribweb.com. And by the way, we're brought to you by Morning Sports Report by Invisible Fence Brand. InvisibleFence.com is the website, a free in-home consultation right now for you. Your pets can safely play in your yard and out of danger. Great products like programmable pet doors for more pet freedom. Invisible Fence Brand at InvisibleFence.com. JB says, Vic cannot make the normal timing routes, curl routes, and out routes.
The out routes, oh, God. Every time he throws an out, my heart jumps into my throat because it looks like it's going for six the other way. It actually, every time he throws an out, this emailer is right, every time he throws an out, it looks like it's intended for the defensive back.
How has he survived this long in the league without being able to do that? I guess just on the legs, right? I mean,
was it always this way with him? Could he never throw an out? It's not like he can't throw an out. He's got the arm to throw it across the field. It's just wildly inaccurate. And the other thing
is
he doesn't throw it before the break. The break happens, and then the defensive back knows that the play is coming, and he's always there to jump the route.
He's like Wild Thing. Yeah. What was the guy's name from Major League?
Ricky Vaughn, yeah.
Vic Vaughn. I mean, he's like he throws a six-yard out, and it goes off the guy's helmet, or you know, they should put the picture of the bull up there or whatever.
The two best throws he's made have been deep throws. The one that Brown dropped in the end zone against the Ravens and the one that he hit Wheaton on. But
Which he's on the move for both of those, right? When he's rolling to his left, he seems to be really good.
There's a reason why whenever Roethlisberger throws those out routes, usually to Wheaton or Brown, that the receiver looks so open. It's because the defensive back hasn't made his break yet. Because Ben has thrown the ball before the break happens. He could diagnose that the receiver is going to be open by the way that defense is set up, what they're doing. He can trust 9 times out of 10 that when AB makes his break, he's going to be open here, or he just throws somewhere else. And, you know, I thought Gruden did a good job. He did a couple things that pissed me off last night on the broadcast, but I thought Gruden did a good job in diagnosing where Vic, on one or two occasions, did not check into something that Roethlisberger would have. And just kind of showed you where the Steelers miss Roethlisberger beyond the obvious numbers. But
you
I'm sorry,
take Ben for granted. There's no question.
I cut that emailer off because I thought he made such a good point. So
well, he was just saying we can't overcome this every week with a guy that's that inaccurate.
Can't. They cannot.
That and speaks to the.
I'll give you another one where it was pretty obvious to me where they missed Roethlisberger, and Gruden was right on this too. And we all know it if we've watched enough Steeler football. When they get a turnover in the middle of the field, like between the 40s. Even between the 35s, if they get a turnover, 9 times out of 10, Roethlisberger's in there, Haley has him going to the end zone. They even did it last week, and that was the ball that Brown dropped. That might not.
I think Gruden even said that.
That's what I'm saying. Gruden pointed that out, and I was tweeting it as Gruden said it. This is so if Ben's here, they're going to the end zone. And I don't know why it's a surprise to the opposing defense every time, because it's not a surprise to me. You know, every time they get a turnover in the middle of the field or they get a good punt return even, they'll go up top for apparently a quick score and the effort to make a quick score. And this time they just turn around and hand the ball to Le'Veon Bell. And they ended up punting.
Which is tough to bitch about because Bell's been so good. But, yeah, they went run, and third and four they ran and they had to punt it away.
They got nothing out of that turnover.
That's a great point. And a Shamarco recovery, that'll be never seen again, perhaps.
Right.
So maybe
it will be because Allen's probably out for a while. I mean, if you said, I don't know if when you got wind, Ken, but it seemed like he went out and within five plays they said he's not coming back into the game.
Which the doctors weren't even looking at him over there, though. It was kind of strange.
That's why I thought at first it might be a break because, you know, it was so quick. But he was out there on the sidelines, no crutches, and then he was jumping around at the end of the game celebrating.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
So that was a little strange, but right away they said he's not going to come back into the game. Usually you get a return is questionable or something like that. Not in this case. He's out.
Lower body soreness like Martavis, probably. Mike S. emails here on the Morning Sports Board. Tim Benson, Ken Laird. How about the Steelers actually executed the plays they needed to this week? I really didn't think they would drive down the field on the last possession, and the D played better than I thought they would. I know the Cards lost, but the difference between them and the Bucks is the Arrieta made similar mistakes against the Cards. So he's going into the Pirates talk here. Anyway,
I guess
sorry,
the Cardinals
Mike,
but... are just better bull riders.
Yeah, the Cardinals. Well, they got to Arrieta, but they didn't win the game, right? They won the war, but not the battle. Or flip that. You know what I'm saying.
I do know what you're saying.
Killer
Chihuahua. Here's what I'm saying. He's human, and the Pirates couldn't prove that.
Mike Smith was Mike Smith.
Can't hit. Remember, Ken, you can't power your way past Jake Arrieta unless you're Jason Hayward.
Killer Chihuahua says, here are my three takes in the game last night, guys. From the Tomlin call, from the movie Dragnet. No, I didn't see the movie Dragnet. So this will maybe be lost to me. To quote Bait Magazine owner Jerry Caesar, Reverend, you got balls as big as church bells. Last week, nobody knew the batted ball rule. Last night, everybody missed the clock running when it should have been known. WTF.
Yeah, always seems to happen on Monday night, doesn't it?
When the NFL expands to Alaska, it will be fun to see Steelers fans invade when they play the Fairbanks Freeze. It was quite a crowd there last night. We'll have... Chris Adamski checking in 11:30 from San Diego, and Guy 11:45.
Obviously, the Killer Chihuahua was not listening to Mike Tomlin. This was a hostile environment. Hostile.
All right, now Troy's upset. He says, you guys are misinformed on the Wheaton touchdown pass. Ben didn't take credit for that play. Vic did the post-game interview on the field and gave credit to Ben. He mentioned Ben's name twice with calling that play. Flanagan then went to Ben and asked him if it was true. Ben didn't seek it out, people to let them know. They sought him out. Well, let's hear the Ben audio here, where Ben, I guess, was asked if that's true by Alex Flanagan. Did you call the pass? Here's what Roethlisberger had to say.
Well, it was, it was more talking to the coaches and said something to the coaches about, hey, I think this certain play would work, and we kind of had to draw it up, if you will. I mean, we had it, but we didn't have it in the game plan. Told him, put Marcus over there, boot, get Mike out of the pocket and run a stutter go, and told Mike, I think, do you like it? He goes, I love it. And so... they called it. I'm just glad it worked, because if it didn't work, I would look really bad. So I'm just glad it worked. I know Mike likes to get out of the pocket, and we hadn't done it all day. And so I knew that he gets out and he gets a little bit of time. And they were some of their corners were pressed bailing a little bit, and we were going to hit some comebacks on them. And so I figured if they're going to expect that, we might as well fake it and go deep.
Ben, you wouldn't have looked bad because no one would have known.
Well, I guess Troy's right. He's half right. I mean, okay, if he was asked about it, what's he going to do? Not answer the question. But,
I can't remember.
He loved every second of that.
Hold on.
He loved every second of that.
Yes, you're right about that. When is the last time?
We hadn't done it all day. That was in the playbook, but I put it in the playbook. We hadn't rolled out all day. Oh, we might as well take a shot at this, I said.
What's he doing talking? He's hurt. You don't talk to hurt players, right? He wasn't active. I thought you didn't talk to players who were inactive.
Well, it's NFL Network.
On game day.
You know? Big time. Anyway, Troy takes exception that we are misrepresenting Roethlisberger. You can judge
yourself. I take exception that he's so uptight about it. Come on, we all know what this is.
Matt emails the show. Tomlin says we have to run the ball because we have Bell. Where was that when the game was on the line against
exactly,
the Ravens?
Exactly.
Did Tomlin give Bell the ball because of what happened there? And why does Haley have a few dumbass calls or trick plays when they're moving the ball with ease every game?
Which plays are you talking about? Was a dumbass play or a trick play?
I don't know. He didn't reference it.
The first Wildcat? I don't like the concept
of... Well, the Wildcat worked. I mean...
Yeah, it was fine. I mean, it worked as... I guess. I don't think it worked the first time. I'm opposed to the concept of a Wildcat. Third down. That's what it was. They went Wildcat third down on the first... Or second down on the first drive. They did it early on the first drive. And it helped stall the drive. So maybe that's what the emailer is referencing. But I just don't
like...
Well,
they gained two and then five out of it. They ran D'Angelo out of it once. On the sweep, on the end around there. Well, actually, if you want to call it a trick play, I don't know. The third and three on the first drive, they went deep for Antonio Brown, and Verrett was all over him.
Yeah, that was stupid.
I mean, in a way, we bitched about Vic them not opening it up or letting him go last week, so I kind of liked it. Take a deep shot, at least, you know, show that you're willing. But
I thought
you were moving the ball, and then it's third and three, and, you know, when you come up empty, that's what happens. You you start to second guess it.
The play didn't have a chance, though. You know, he was covered, number one, and whether he was covered or not, Vic was throwing. Like, that looked very strange to me on a 3rd and 3. 3rd and 10, maybe? 3rd and 15 after a penalty, something like that?
Right.
Yeah, I get it, but 3rd and 3 where it's you should be able to pick it up. Why don't you go see, in my opinion, what you do there is you pick up the first down, then you try that shot. Right? You get the third down, and then you try that shot. Okay, but on 3rd down?
Well, they're not expecting it, and he's in single coverage. Like, that's the thing. Like, Kabali was tweeting, they didn't respect Vic for 3 quarters. They just left Brown in single coverage, and there was nothing they could do about it.
I heard John talking to Ike about that before we got on. He was like, oh, well, teams are following him around the field, and they're doubling him around the field. He wasn't doubled.
No, not last night.
Verrett had him locked
down. That was
Verrett.
Verrett is good.
Verrett was a guy I wanted them to go after in free agency a couple years ago, or whenever he came. It was the last year, year before that when he came up. You know, I thought they should have gone after him, but
he wasn't a first rounder, right? He was a he was a first rounder.
He was borderline. He might have been late first round, but anyway, I liked him in free agency. I thought the Steelers should have given him a sniff, but maybe they did, and it was just more expensive than they ever want to pay for a cornerback.
He went in the 25th overall pick in the 2014 draft. That was the year they took Shazier 15. So he went 10 picks later after they took Shazier.
Maybe it was the draft then that I'm thinking of and not free agency. 2014 draft?
2014, yeah, which was the Jadeveon Clowney draft.
It was the draft then, but I remember them, his name being brought up with the Steelers, and I thought he was going to be a really good fit.
No, I think you're right. I think they were interested. Well, I mean, we were talking a lot of corners that year. That was the Kyle Fuller,
yeah, that's what it was.
Justin
that's
Gilbert
what it was.
Year.
I'm sorry. I was thinking of what's
Darquez
his name?
Darquez Dennard.
The guy from Tennessee that came up in free agency. But anyway, I did like Verrett. I thought he was a good player, and he is good. He's panning out well for them, and he did a good job on Brown last night, but they weren't doubling him.
No. Ben emailed Joe. He says, if time was the problem, doesn't that play call make sense? Because Le'Veon gets the ball directly and cuts out the second or so it would have taken Vic to hand the ball off. The refs letting 2 or 3 seconds run off the clock on the Miller catch could have been a disaster, too, if Bell didn't score. They got lucky there. I didn't see that. Did they let extra time run off after the Heath catch?
Oh, God. Now I got to go back to ESPN.com and try to freeze this frame by frame again.
Because that actually would be big. I mean, so then you get into what's the normal continuation of a play where when you blow the whistle, the clock should stop instantly? You know, it's not a perfect world. There's a little delay there. But if it's 3 seconds, that's wrong.
I still contend, and if people want to put their mind at ease over that, go as I just pointed out, to ESPN.com and go frame by frame, and you will see that the female ref has her hands up in the air as the clock goes from 2 to 1, thus signaling the end of the play, or the assumption would then be, what, a tenth of a second? Even before that, his knee would have been down, correct?
So the Chargers got screwed. They should have had to kick off to San Diego.
Yes, they should have had to kick off with a second left. Yes.
Tim emails the show. Speaking about a memo going out, how about a memo to start calling the pick play more closely? The Chargers ran several, and New England was called for one against the Cowboys, but they got away with many more in that game on Sunday.
Yeah.
And the Steelers did yesterday. Right? I mean, there are a ton of pick plays being run
across
the league.
Well, it's funny he brings up the Patriots there because that was the thing last year for them at the start of the year. They had all those offensive pass interference penalties to start the year. They had like 5 in 3 games or something like that because they run a ton of pick plays. And because there was such an emphasis on defensive pass interference and illegal contact down the field, they overemphasized, I think, calling the pick play as a way to balance it out. But they've called so much less of the defensive stuff down the field that I think they are also then, by extension, not calling the pick play as much. But the emailer is right. If you watch games across the league, there are pick plays everywhere that aren't getting called.
Well, the lone Antonio Brown catch of the night was a pick play, right? Heath Miller basically drilled the guy, and Gruden was complaining about the corners being on the same level, which I think that's good insight from a coach. You know, if you're going to defend, you can't have two guys stacked at the same yard line, otherwise they're going to get picked. But I bet that's easier said than done when you're out there trying to stick to your guy. That's a good email, though. Lou emails. Lou is formerly from SoCal, so Lou left before he got to attend this game.
Do we get Lou's thoughts on Hector Santiago?
Yeah, we should get his breakdown on Hector, who was Rob Rossi's, the apple of his eye. Great game, and to win with probably one of the worst quarterbacks in the league, guys. I've got no problem with Vic as a person. He did his time, but God, is he horrible. I have no problem with a female ref either, but she did have a quick whistle. It's like she was a guy with premature ejaculation. Oh, jeez. Come on, Lou. I was asking for Landry myself.
2 seconds run off the clock after Heath is hit. That is correct. He catches the ball and goes down at 8, 7, 6, and then it stops at 5. So 2 full seconds did run off.
So is it complaint worthy?
By the Chargers?
Did they screw up? If you're a Steelers fan, are you saying we deserve 2 more seconds there?
If what happened at the end of the game would have been, we've ruled on the field that Le'Veon Bell's knee touched the ground, game over, then the Steelers have tons of room to bitch because 18 seconds came off before the exchange of possession, 2 seconds came off with Heath, so that's 20, and then 1 second would have remained on the clock for Bell, that's 21. So they lost 21 seconds there, if that's the case.
God bless Jaleel Adai, this year's Nick Harper. Justin M. emails, how about Brown not getting his 5 catches and 50 yards for the second week in a row? Glad that streak is over.
The new streak has begun.
He seems like a selfish asshat, Justin says. That's a little harsh. You find Brown to be a selfish asshat?
He's like Hines insofar as he doesn't do the diva speeches and the diva stomping on the sideline, but that 5 for 50 thing was very important to him.
Yeah.
And anybody who buys those suits, those hats, and cuts his hair like that, there's some diva quality. There's a look at me quality.
He's a hard worker, though. I mean, I respect him for that. There are a lot of guys that...
So is Hines. So is Dez Bryant. Doesn't mean you're not a diva.
Is Dez Bryant? I mean, I don't know him. Maybe he is. Maybe
he was a hard worker. He's got a pretty good work ethic, because from everything I've heard, he's a nut job. But
Joel in Fargo, how can Tomlin not know about the time or any other member of the coaching staff? Would have been nice to be able to run another play at the end if needed. I think that goes without saying. Sean in Canada says, was listening to your postgame show last night, Tim. If you get T-shirts made up of the Immaculate Extension, I'm in for one.
I think we lost that guy's number on purpose.
P.S. Can't wait for the Habs to hammer the Pens tonight. Yeah, there'll be a chance for that.
You want to make sure that guy is cut out, so we're blocking him from ever calling again.
Oh, really? Okay.
When the guy said about expanding to Alaska, one of our last calls last night was from Alaska. We actually got a phone call from Alaska watching the game. Yeah.
We're commercial-free here in this hour of Cooler Talk, known as the Trib Live Radio Morning Sports Report, not brand X, Y, or Z. Chris says, we mean the Steelers, never throw that deep ball in short yardage. You've got to do it occasionally, talking about the 3rd-and-3 shot. Green Bay hit that on us in the Super Bowl for a touchdown on 4th down, if you remember. You got to keep the defense honest, otherwise they'll play the sticks 100% of the time. And I thought, finally, Tomlin used smart aggression. Too many times he's aggressive just because he feels like it. The Steelers weren't going to get down there again. The defense was spent. I thought it was the right call to go for the win.
Well, that's fine. If you thought that they should have gone for the win there, and if Tomlin thought that they should have gone for the win there, we don't want to bother kicking with our rookie kicker. We don't want to risk overtime. This is our best chance to win the game, so let's do it. Okay. I understand. I'll buy in. But he couches it when he says it. It's pretty clear he was trying to, in his mind, use that timeout or have that timeout available. Right?
Yeah.
You heard the explanation. We played it twice. He said, yeah. I thought I would have had time left. I was hoping to
have
the
time.
Yes. Yeah. So he was considering the timeout. If you were considering the timeout as part of the equation, then I don't get what you did. If you were willing to get on the plane as a loser with a timeout in your pocket because you thought it was worth the risk to get the touchdown, okay, good for you. I get the strategy. But when you couch it and you say that, you know, we wanted to maybe use the timeout, then you've put yourself in a real adverse position.
Well, I think he wanted to be aggressive knowing the timeout was probably there in the back pocket. Look, I believe that's true. Like he said, this is kind of bonus, right? We can be aggressive and go for it, and there's still a chance that we'll have time left to call that timeout if we don't get in.
That's the wrong play to run if you're considering using the timeout. The only play, if you're going to run the football, the only play that you could try is a quarterback sneak.
Even then, though, you have a chance of getting stacked up. And
or you have Le'Veon Bell closer than 7 yards back, and he runs straight as opposed to going to the outside, which he did.
Well, can you ask Tomlin today? Because what Bell told me, maybe this is a better question for Le'Veon again, but the fact that he likes the ball that deep and to get it early as opposed to a traditional handoff, is there something to that? Because I believe there is. And that's why I can't crush him for running it 7 yards deep, because it's his best play. He runs better when he gets the ball and lets things set up like that. He can do all the jump cutting and the maneuvering he does.
Okay, but letting things set up like that takes time. It takes a couple seconds.
I know, but worth it if you're going to be able to score on it. If it gives you a better chance to score.
Yes, worth it if you're willing to live or die with that play. Hmm. But then don't tell me about the timeout.
Ryan emails one more here in our commercial-free hour. We'll hear from some of the post-game audio here. I think we're going to just stick commercial-free, Tim, until you leave at 11:25 here. You're going to head down to the presser today. So we'll just roll on through. We'll hear from want to hear from Vic coming up or Le'Veon Bell? Maybe both. But Ryan emails and he says, the emailer's right about that Miller play. He got hit with 8 seconds left and they stopped the clock at five. With all this technology, the NFL still lets this time bleed off the clock, and I have no doubt it's cost teams game in the past. It's like it's 1980 and they have light bulbs in the scoreboard. And if the ball had gotten stuffed there, the game was over, but if they had put 3 seconds back, there was time to get stuffed and still kick the field goal.
He's right.
Which means San Diego almost benefited from the personal foul, as he says. I don't know about that, though.
This is weird. There's a window washer guy coming up right outside of us.
Oh, yeah, that's always awkward.
Yeah.
Now, at least you're clothed
today. I feel like he's going to watch me for the next half hour here. Like I'm a monkey in the zoo.
By the way,
fling my poo at him.
Oh, God. By the way, Jeff says, don't forget, guys, that AB's streak is still alive with Ben as quarterback, so wait for the 5-50 to be resurrected in 2 weeks.
That's an excellent
That's a good point, Jeff.
Yeah, good point, Jeff. Good call.
All right, well, we heard from Ben, we heard from Mike Tomlin a little bit. Let's hear from Le'Veon Bell.
The window washer guy is smoking, by the way. He should get on board with our Duffy's vapes. Because
what's he smoking? Oh, yeah.
A Marb. Look like a Marb light.
Just a stove hanging out of the side of the mouth there?
No, it's a cigarette, not a stogie.
A heater. An Angel Cabrera heater. Here's Le'Veon Bell after last night's game, who was the first player in NFL, not history, but the first player in the NFL to score the game-winning touchdown as time expired since Ricky Williams in October of 2001 with the Saints. So it's been a little while.
I knew once we was going for it, because I didn't know we had when the penalty happened with Heath, I didn't know, you know, we got to save our timeout, you know. So I was thinking we didn't have no timeouts left, so I'm thinking we about to kick a field goal. But once we knew we had a timeout left, we was going for it, and I knew the play was going to get called. You know, I mean, we was talking about it all week, so I knew it was going to get called.
Le'Veon, was that the best touchdown of your career so far?
Yeah, I think it was most meaningful for sure. You know, to win the game, you know, game winner, last play of the game, that's something you always dream about, you know. And I'm glad I was able to go in there and deliver for the team.
Did you guys petition for that play call at all? I mean, was there ever a doubt that you guys would go for it?
We knew, you know, coming into the week, if it ever came down to, you know, a play that we have to have it, you know, if it was a 4th and 1 that we may need, or, you know, the goal line play, the last play of the game, we was going to go to that Wildcat play. You know, and it actually came. You know, we had a last play of the game, called the Wildcat play. They haven't seen it all game, and then we went in there, executed, and got the ball in the end zone.
Do you like the Wildcat? Do you like running out of that?
I do. It gives the defense a different look. Obviously, you know, we got enough guys, more blockers, you know, than they got, you know, defenders in a sense, you know, because I'm at the quarterback position, and, you know, I'm using all the blockers up front. So it's definitely a good tool to use, and I like it a lot.
Chris Adamski, who was at the game and will join us at 11:30, Tim, said that the Steelers ran that winning play in practice in their 7 shots the other day, their 2-point conversion drill. And according to Chris, or somebody he talked to, the D stopped Bell, who vowed that it wouldn't happen again. So they then went back to that same play this week.
Yeah, I read that. So again, to use your Super Bowl analogy, that's the same thing that happened in practice during the week for Malcolm Butler during the year. Remember, because he had been beaten on that play a couple times during the week leading up to practice, and Belichick told him how important it was. Be ready for it, and then sure enough, it happened.
Or going back to the James Harrison 100 in the Steelers Super Bowl win, where they were practicing the convoy of returners, right?
Yeah.
Rally to the football, everybody come back and block. So that's kind of neat how that stuff pays off.
Especially
on
when Larry Fitzgerald runs 35 yards out of bounds.
You almost got him.
You should do that just for fun this week at Heinz Field, just for no particular reason. Run 35 yards out of bounds and come back in again.
He and Harrison, so you just in a race, try to reenact it?
No, they're both a little slower than they were back in 2008, as you might imagine.
The Pro Football Focus snap counts from last night for your pass rushers, Tim. James Harrison and Arthur Motes, 39. Jarvis Jones and Bud Dupree, 37. So the timeshare has continued. Which you talked about in preseason, you know, back in training camp, where Keith Butler told you he was going to defer to the old guys, and basically he has, although slightly.
I felt like the outside linebackers had pressure. I don't know how much it manifested into, you know, legitimate hits on the quarterback or, deflections, sacks, anything like that. Obviously, the outside linebackers, each of them, the young guys, had one sack. But maybe Motes and Harrison were better than what the stats would have indicated as far as getting to Rivers, because I felt the pocket collapsing around him quite a bit. And obviously, that had a lot to do with Tua and Hayward, who continued to be really good.
They were good. I thought Timmons had a really good game. His batted pass on the 3rd and 8 before the Chargers kicked the field goal was big. Keenan Allen was wide open coming across the middle. I mean, he probably would have gone for close to a touchdown, and they would have scored without any time on the clock for the Steelers to come back, right? I mean,
that's where Gruden pissed me off, was talking about Cam Hayward. Where he said, this guy never leaves the field. He's been at 93 degrees, and he hasn't left the field the whole night. I said, he's going to get hurt. Here comes the ACL. Here we go. Sure enough, bang. Very next play, he had to go out. Look, that looked like a stinger, too, just like Shazier.
Where was the pass interference on Cockrell was the previous touchdown drive for San Diego. What did you think of that play? Because it was 1st and 20, and they called that one on Cockrell against Keenan Allen, who had fumbled it out of bounds. I thought that was a huge play, and it got him rolling there. I didn't think it was a very good call, but I guess it could have gone either way. There was a little contact. I thought it was tough.
Yeah, that's one that could have been, like you said, it could have gone either way. I didn't have a hang up on that one. You know what I was hung up on more than anything else was Lisa Salter's report about D'Angelo Williams and the NFL saying you can't wear pink outside of Pink Marketing Month.
Did that surprise you at all, though? I feel like we've heard that story before.
With him?
Well, I don't know. Or just like, you know, when who was the guy that used to do the color with Pompeiani before Batch? What's his name, the lineman? Who's the
Edmund
the
Nelson.
Yeah, Edmund Nelson.
Yeah, the uniform cop.
He was preventing people from doing things like that, wasn't he? Or
but the funny thing is, they allowed D'Angelo Williams to have his pink tips in Madden 2016. Did you see that? Like, to him, that's a moral victory that he was able to do this. But come on, guy lost his mom and 4 aunts to breast cancer, and you're doing this whole thing in the name of altruism, and it's just abundantly clear when you want to focus your marketing on 1 month of where the pink memorabilia is out there. It's like the McRib at McDonald's. Limited time only. Got to get it now. Can't dilute the marketing effort by having D'Angelo Williams wear pink somewhere, for God's sakes. It's just NFL being the NFL.
What happened last year was with William Gay, because same thing. William Gay lost his mother to breast cancer, and he wore the pink shoes last year.
He got fined.
Ike Taylor paid the fine for him. Or at least Ike said he did. And he said, because Gay was saying, they're not going to let me wear these. But he said, Ike said, you wear them and I'll pay the fine.
But you know what I'm saying, Ken, whether it's been said before or not, it's look at us, look at us.
Yes.
Aren't we a great outlet? Don't we care so much? And it's kind of like them taking the millions of dollars from the military for all these pregame military salutes. You know, yes, we will be forefront in supporting the military so long as you pay us. We will do what we can to raise breast cancer awareness so long as we only give away 8% of the profits. You know, it's just, please. And then it comes on the same day that they're going after Deadspin and SB Nation for the GIFs. Did you see that they shut down SB Nation? They shut down the Deadspin Twitter account because they had GIFs up there?
Well, explain this to me, because I had heard this was coming before. Because
I can't believe it hasn't happened yet. I'm stunned.
Right.
Based on their track record that it lasted this long, for since 2009 or whatever, when Twitter launched, 2008, people are putting GIFs and Vines up there of NFL games, and they're saying that it's now a trademark infringement.
Which it is, right? I mean, that's accurate.
You'd think. I mean, I get a lot of stuff from GIFs and Vines.
There are people that make their whole life on social media just from, and they do it quick.
Like
it's Jiffy. Amazing.
Jiffy.com.
Yeah, I mean.
Or GIF. We always have this debate, GIF or GIF. The guy who invented them said it was GIF, even though GIF makes sense based on how it's pronounced, but whatever. So
right.
I go with GIF. But, yeah, there's like Jiffy.com and
Yeah, you're using the property that's not yours. You know, you can't just take a picture off the internet and put it on your blog if it's not your picture.
Right.
People get upset about that. It happens all the time, but it's piracy.
Sure. And, you know, Clear Channel's been hit. CBS Radio's been hit. You know, here we are. We can't use any real music, right, because of the same thinking, the same trademark infringement. But I thought if it was X number of seconds or video or less, then you were allowed to do it. I thought it was 15 seconds, and then I heard it was 6. But whatever, the NFL is now going after them. And I think Barstool got its Twitter page shut
down. Deadspin got shut down.
As I said, Deadspin and SB Nation, I think Barstool today.
Now, I mean, can these places, like, does Deadspin make money off that in and of itself? Maybe not. I mean, probably they exist as it is. I don't know if Deadspin makes any money for that matter. Do they turn a profit? I guess they probably do. They're big enough now. Well, they've got some advertising.
They're too big to not make money.
But the NFL is taking that away from them. Will it cripple them?
They'll cripple them, but they get a lot of hits on Vines. They get a lot of hits on those short little snippets. But it was just funny to me to have those two stories coalesce on the same day about this billion-dollar industry being petty. You know, you're a billion-dollar industry, a multi-billion-dollar industry, $10 billion. $12 billion, right, coursing through the NFL. And you've done all this despite the proliferation of these little six-second videos. But let's make sure we get those out.
Yeah.
All right. You know, is D'Angelo Williams wearing pink in September and November going to somehow derail the sales of the pink jerseys in October?
Yeah, it's so hypocritical because it's an initiative you started. Like, the league launched the initiative, and then they have stringent rules about what can't be worn within the initiative. It's not like it's
You make an exception
goldfish
for one
and sneakers,
person,
you know.
You make an exception for everybody. Well, no, you don't. You don't make an exception for everybody. You don't let people write the gang symbols on their shoes. You know, you don't have you know, have curse words on the eye black or whatever. You
Greg Hardy's rap lyrics on not on his material. Yeah, I can
understand
that.
You're wearing freaking pink for breast cancer awareness because it's something you wanted to do. It's jumping on your gravy train and promoting it. So get over it, you hard asses.
Hey, good question from Mike here before we get to Mike Vick. Mike from Newcastle emails and he says, if Ben was playing last night, guys, what would the last play have been? Do they go to Le'Veon Bell or is there a quarterback sneak?
Quarterback sneak, they throw it.
they go Pete Carroll and they throw the slant?
There's no way that play is called. You know, and again, that's a good point by the emailer because it ties in with what I was saying about how Tomlin was thumping his chest and, what do you think I'm going to do? Anything besides give the ball to Le'Veon Bell? Yeah, because you did it last week 4 times against Baltimore. So don't try to sing that song to me. And Le'Veon Bell is only your best player on offense when Ben Roethlisberger is not out there. When Ben Roethlisberger is out there, he's your best player. And by extension, likely Antonio Brown becomes your second best player. So my guess is that if the exact same situation is in front of Mike Tomlin with Ben Roethlisberger as the quarterback, let me put it to you this way. Ben Roethlisberger ain't taking credit for Le'Veon Bell running out of the Wildcat, especially if it doesn't work if Ben Roethlisberger is in that game. Alex Flanagan has a different storyline to tell.
Okay, now, will you ask Tomlin? I'm thinking of a good question for you to ask Mike because I like your questions would put him on edge. Can you ask him if last night's play calling was dictated by the failures of not using Le'Veon Bell in the Baltimore game, or some phrasing of that?
Yes,
you think
I'll do
he'll
that.
Bite on that? I think that might be a good one because then he could say no, it's had nothing to do with it, but it kind of brings it up and puts him on edge, right? It puts him on the back pedal,
right? So okay, so now I'm pissing him off with going back to last week.
Yes,
I'm pissing him off with the hypothetical about Heath.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the other one I'm pissing him off with? Clock. How the hell does no one on your sideline know that 18 seconds have vanished?
Yeah, and for that one, I mean, I think you could easily be upset if you're Tomlin at members of your staff that should be paying attention to that. Maybe you have people that are delegated to do that for you. And it's not that
what does Ray
uncommon.
Jackson do? Isn't that part of his job?
He throws with Ben before the game, doesn't he? Well, that's Marcel.
Well, what's Marcel doing? I mean, he's not warming up Roethlisberger. How about Marcel looks at the clock?
Michael Vick is Tim's favorite.
Ken, there's 65 to 70 people on that sideline. Not one of them noticed.
What was Bert Loughton doing?
Oh, my God. Unbelievable.
Didn't matter. Mike Vick got the job done in 18 seconds less. And he is a winning QB. Here's what Mike Vick said after the win.
You know, a lot of encouragement from my teammates. You know, Bing continued to encourage me throughout the entire game. You know, a play call by Ben that scored a touchdown for us, which was remarkable. And then Ty just finished it up, you know, on that last drive. And, you know, the defense played well. It played great. You know, my offensive line and all the guys stuck in there, hung in there with me. They understand I'm still, you know, learning in progress, you know. We just fought hard. We never gave up. We continued to encourage each other, and we was able to pull it out.
You said last week you hadn't felt that kind of pain after the Baltimore game. You hadn't felt that kind of pain in a long time. What do you feel right now?
Oh, man, I'm elated right now. You know, just, you know, happy that I was able to get a win for this team. You know, we worked extremely hard throughout the weekend. You know, everybody believed in one another, and you know, they all believe in me. So, you know, it's very gratifying to be able to reward them with a win, you know, especially in this type of fashion. And I think, you know, it's just one, but we got to keep going. We got to keep it going, you know, until the captain of the ship comes back.
You had three consecutive three-and-outs in the second half.
My confidence never wavered. It was just, you know, me at times kind of second-guessing myself. You know, guys, you know, coming open, you know, me looking in a different direction, just trying to do too much at times. But, you know, fourth quarter, I just played within the system. I tried to go back to the grassroots of the offense and just play through. And, you know, I know the basis of everything. I know what, you know, Todd want. And, you know, I just try to deliver. So I just got to give a lot of credit to, you know, Todd, Randy, Ben, you know, Landry, all on the sideline, made it happen for me.
Have you been reluctant at all to throw the ball down the field in these games, or is that the plan not to do that very much?
No, we got plans to throw the ball down the field. You know, it's just a time and a place for it. We had a strategy for this game, and, you know, I kind of knew everybody was going to feel like, you know, we didn't stretch the field. But, you know, our game plan was to run the ball, tie those guys out, and then try to take advantage of them, you know, when we had times. But and opportunities, but it never presented itself until the end. And, you know, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. You know, we pulled it out. You know, take my hat off to the San Diego Chargers. They played a great game defensively, and, you know, I tip my hat to my teammates, and my offensive line was just hanging in there with me.
Elated is the word that Mike Vick used. You do wonder, Tim, if this could boost him a little bit for this week. And not to say that any of us are feeling real good about them beating Arizona and keeping up with them, but they did finish strong in the fourth quarter. I mean, could Vic look a lot better Sunday than he did for most of this game before coming back last night?
I was so looking forward to ripping him today.
You would have had every right to.
Were
you calling for Landry Jones? Because I know I was.
I was not calling for Landry Jones because I have no belief that Landry Jones would have been any better, and maybe he would have been worse, because his bad throws and out routes are much more interceptable than Michael's hard throws are. So those three near interceptions that San Diego had might have turned into actual interceptions if it's Landry throwing them out there.
Bill Cowher would have done it, though. I guarantee you that. Cowher would have pulled the quarterback in the seat. He probably would have flip-flopped back and forth for about three quarters.
Maybe. But then again, you know, this is Mike Tomlin, who loves Michael Vick like a son.
He does.
For whatever reason.
The 73-yard pass, I mean, that Ben supposedly called or drew up.
Yes.
Is it bad defense or great offense?
The Alex Flanagan go route, as it will forever be known.
It's just horrible defense from Brandon Flowers, right? I mean, you can't get beat deep there when you've just taken a lead with 8 minutes to go in a game where the other offense is inept.
He was beaten on that play when Wheaton started the first move. As soon as Wheaton started the first move, it was there. I think Wheaton was the first one to realize that, too. You could see his eyeballs lit up as he was setting him up for that move. And, Vic just had to deliver the ball.
That catch, coupled with Antoine Blake's 70-yard pick six, according to the Steelers, that's the first Steelers game with a TD catch and a pick six of 70-plus yards since November the 12th, 1961, Tim.
I remember it fondly.
When Buddy Dial caught a 73-yard pass from Rudy Bukic and Bill Butler had a 71-yard interception return for a touchdown. So there's your thunder and lightning 70-yard, 5 yards, 5 catches, 50 yards.
I feel like any question, stat of the game. Any trivia question involving the Steelers pre-1970 always ends with Buddy Dial.
Yeah, Buddy Dial's involved somewhere. I agree with you on that. Some of the stats from this game, Tim, the final totals for Michael Vick, 13 of 26 passing, 203 yards, 72 of it on the one play.
When he hit Marcus Wheaton, that accounted for, at the time, 45% of his passing yards. 45%.
That's awesome.
At that point in the game.
One TD, one sort of meaningless pick on the Hail Mary, end of the first half. Quarterback rating of 73.1. And the one carry for 24 yards.
How about at the end of the game, that QBR that ESPN used? It's not passer rating. It's their own. It's that QBR. Mm-hmm. He had a better QBR than Phillip Rivers.
Did he really?
A better QBR than Phillip Rivers.
Because of the...
Well,
why would that be?
Is it running? Do they take running into effect? They take running into effect. So there's 24 more yards of running that he did.
That is dumb.
But... You're looking at it now, aren't you, Josh? Josh's eyes just popped out of his head. I'm not exaggerating. It was, what about 5 points? What is it? Because I lost the page. 8 points. He had 8 points better on the QBR than Phil Rivers did.
Okay, eyeball test. Who was the better quarterback last night?
Phil Rivers.
Not even close.
Yeah,
so that
especially
stat
for
is
the first
then.
50 minutes of that game.
Rivers, 35 of 48 for 365. And two beautiful passes. That Gates touchdown pass to beat Robert Golden was awesome. I mean, he threw some great. That whole drive was great. The throw to Floyd over the middle, the 32-yard pass. He put a couple right on the money.
Did you see the thing that was going around the internet for a while yesterday? Phillip Rivers kills a bird?
No.
Well, I noticed this. A couple people sent it to me. And for a while I was thinking, okay, both quarterbacks hate animals, I guess. But after the touchdown, after his second touchdown to Gates, there's a meme, and somebody else is going to get their Twitter page shot down, I guess, by the NFL. But there was a meme of Rivers punching something out of the sky. It looked like he punched a bird. Like, you know, where Randy Johnson killed the bird with the fastball?
Oh, yeah.
Like, you
just
punched the air, and you belted a bird. So this whole thing, a Phillip Rivers bird is trending now in Pittsburgh and San Diego. And somebody, I think it was Chris Dokish, who writes for that Panther site.
Yeah.
Got a hold of me, and he said, no, it was his glove. Apparently, for whatever reason, he threw his glove up in the air and then punched the glove. And the glove is fluttering in the air, and it looked like he hit a sparrow. I was fooled, and it was all over the place. Like, you know, Barstool had it, and a couple other sites had it. And I'm sure they're all shut down today because of the National Football League. But, yeah, Phillip Rivers punched a bird. Look it up online.
He had a few patented Phillip Rivers face moments.
When he was screaming at Malcolm Floyd?
Yeah, some good gifs there that would have flown around. It's not as good as Peyton Manning face, maybe, but it's close. When things go poorly for Phil, it's...
Manning forehead.
Crumpled forehead. Sam emails the show. He says, Antoine Blake did return that interception for a touchdown, guys, but I thought somebody was going to strip it from him a few times. Why do defensive players, when they
what
get
the
a turnover,
hell was that?
Carry the ball like a jackass?
Our emailers are on a lot of things today, Ken, a lot of good points. Maybe you're just going over the stupid ones, but, I mean, I think most of our emails have been on it today.
I couldn't believe that. It was like he was slowing down for the last 20 yards. It was maybe he was tired. It was a hot night. I mean, try to give him the benefit of the doubt a little bit.
Yeah, generally our emailers are pretty good. I like our emailers a lot. And I'm also getting to the point now where I'm really getting worried about the post-game show. Because we have had just a disproportionate amount of sober phone callers to the post-game show. I do not like this.
Wow, even late night like last night?
Well, yeah, and here's the thing. It's because I think the proliferation of Steeler Nation Radio has gotten to the point now where it's just more accessible to people. People know what it is. They listen online and so forth. So,
like Alaska, for instance?
Right. We get all these calls from across the country, and it jams up the phone lines for the Pittsburgh drunks so they can't get through. And they get frustrated, so they don't pack the phone lines. And, like, our average wait time on hold is, like, an hour and 15 minutes. You know, these diehards from South Carolina and Modesto and Alaska and, you know, New Mexico. We get these people from all over the place. They don't hang up. They're sober. They're patient. They're borderline well-spoken in the points that they make, and it ruins the show. I mean, where are the drunks? Where are the guys from Carrick that have been boozing since they got home from work at 4 o'clock, waiting for the game to start, that are upset because Ben wasn't in there? How come they started Vic over Ben? You know, like stuff like that, this nonsensical jibber-jabber that I'm used to getting on the post-game show. They've all been weeded out by sober people with phones in different states. I don't like it. I'm against this.
I'll tell you what, Tim, it's a great point, and it's the true essence of being a Pittsburgh sports fan. There's this whole culture of being in the city of Pittsburgh and living, and then there's this whole other culture of across the country, you know, which Tom was talking about yesterday.
Yeah, that's who I was growing up. You know, I grew up in New England as a Steeler fan.
I don't know what's the authentic and what's the non-authentic. I mean, I think they're both legitimate. Our emailers, a lot of them are across the country.
So wait a minute, are you calling me illegitimate? Am I a bastard Steeler fan because I didn't grow up in Pittsburgh, but I grew up a Steeler fan?
No, that's what I'm saying. I think they're both part of the equation. I think they're both great, but they're very different. The two don't mingle very often.
No. Well, I mean, like I said, my enthusiasm is dampened so long as two is under center and playing quarterback. But I mean,
it was. Thank you, Dan Bylsma.
So long as Joe Melikar is playing quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah, you know, let me analyze the game. I'll break it down. I hate watching him. I'm not going to lie. I hate watching him succeed. I was really looking forward to waking up today and just tearing him a new one for how much he sucks. And then he was great for the last 10 minutes.
Let me get two more in here for you, Tim, before you get out of here. Zappa in Columbus, where he used to work, says, is the Steelers' defensive scheme to always keep the tight end uncovered no matter who they play?
Yes.
I am still trying to figure out how they won that game.
Yes. Never cover the tight end.
The tight ends last night. Gates targeted 11 times. 9 catches, 92 yards. Ladarius Green, 5 for 5 in targets for 50 yards. They gave up 140 yards to tight ends.
The Steelers on defense, it's kind of like you know, the Ravens at the playoffs last year in Foxborough. Do not cover number 34. He's ineligible. Do not cover number 87. Do not cover number 85. Act as if they're ineligible and hope Rivers doesn't see him wide open.
Well, who's the Arizona Cardinals tight end this week that Tom will be gushing about?
I don't
about?
Know, but it'll be in the Hall of Fame by Monday.
And Chris says the QBR, the pick six is what killed Phil Rivers' QBR, the ESPN stat.
Okay.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, that kind of
interceptions kill you in passer rating, too. You have an interception, it really throws it off. But, I mean, is it even worse because it's a pick six?
I guess so. You're giving up points to the other teams. So.
Yeah. So he gets killed because Malcolm Floyd ran a bad route, huh?
You think that was more a bad route than it was a good play by Blake? I thought Blake read it pretty well and undercut it, but
well,
maybe
yeah,
that's
sure.
Part of it.
Yeah, definitely props to him for making the play. But if we're talking about receiver versus quarterback, I thought Gruden made a good point in analyzing that. He didn't – that wasn't a very flat rating. Cut it off flat. He rounded it off and gave Blake room to run in underneath it. I thought that was well diagrammed on the telecast.
Former Bengal Jermaine Gresham is the tight end in Arizona, Google tells me. So he's not really a great pass catcher. This actually might be, hey, maybe they'll have a good week. Somebody named Darren Fells, who I don't really know much about, who's another tight end there. Anyway. All right, Tim, you got work to do. Put Tomlin on his heels, will you? Ruin a good day.
Again, remind me. For the team. So it's the hypothetical about Heath, right? It's why don't you have a single friggin' person on your sideline that noticed the clock,
the
right?
The clock, yep. And then go back to the Ravens and the usage of Le'Veon Bell, and did that factor into why they used
Bell? Okay, I'm
Bell.
Writing this down. Bell, Heath, dumbasses who don't look at clock.
Phrase it just that way, will you,
okay.
Dumbasses?
I got it. All right, I'm good. Talk to you later.
We're expecting big things. That's the Tomlin Presser coming up at noon with Tim Benz in the audience. And Mike Tomlin's favorite, as always, when he scans out and sees TB there. This is Trib Live Radio. It's Tuesday, October 13th. It is a bizarre game, to be sure, to be analyzing a lot of different ins and outs of it. We've been commercial-free since 10 a.m. We're all brought to you by Invisible Fence Brand in the Morning Sports Report and by Duffy's Beer on Curry Hollow Road, 294 Curry Hollow Road, with great weekly specials at duffysbeer.com. And you want to get there when you can for the Oktoberfest at Pumpkin Beers before they are gone. All their specials, including some great specials. Ying 24-pack cans on special this month for just $14.99. Miller Lite and Coors Light as well. It's your South Hills headquarters for beer, pop, snacks, vapes, and home brewing supplies, and all your party and tailgating needs for this week's game. Guy Junker joins us at 11:45 live from San Diego. But first, Chris Adamski live from San Diego. Back to back, we'll go to the West Coast next here on Trib Live.